Hi, it's Nick Sadler from The Label Machine here, and on today's podcast, we have co-founder and CEO of Mogul, Jeff Ponchik. We discussed how Jeff and his company is helping indie artists find $3 million of unclaimed revenue streams, how labels that want to set up an admin publishing arm for the artist should set things up, and what is the best way to increase your revenue streams in 2024. This was a super insightful podcast from a real music mogul, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did recording it. You're listening to the Label Machine series, a podcast to inspire and help indie record labels and artists to build income streams for their music. I'm Nick Sadler, a music entrepreneur that has helped start and run multiple indie record labels. In this series, I'll be speaking with music industry leaders about their experience and the lessons they learned on how they both market and grow their music income. Welcome to the Label Machine series, where we discuss with our guests how artists and record labels monetize music. Today's guest is Jeff Ponchik. A graduate of the University of California, Jeff was a pioneer in helping indie music artists make money with their music by founding the Repost Network, which went on to be acquired in a multi-million deal by SoundCloud. A few years later, he made the prestigious Forbes 30 Under 30 list, of note being the only music tech company entrepreneur that year to make the list. As well as becoming head of creator at SoundCloud, he was also named Billboard Music Indie Power Player in 2022. He's now the co-founder and CEO of Mogul, a service that brings new business insights and revenue opportunities to professionals in the music business. His vision is to allow musicians and their teams to combine the incredibly complex world of royalties, upwards of 50 logons, into one platform so they're all getting their revenue they're owed and allowing them to focus on what they do best, create music. Jeff, how are you today?
Doing great. Wonderful introduction. Thank you.
All right. So before we jump in our research, I see that you took a career gap year before starting Mogul. Is it Mogul or Moogle?
Just Mogul. Like a music mogul, or like the thing you ski over, like those bumps. Yeah.
Gotcha. So I'd love to hear, why you did that, why you took the gap, what it was like, and, what did you spend your time doing for that whole year?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lovely question. So starting Repost to growing it into profitability to selling it into SoundCloud and then, rising the ranks to head of creator at SoundCloud, that was about a 8 or so year arc for me and my co-founder and my team. And to be completely honest, the life of an entrepreneur is difficult and there's lots of ups and downs and it's crazy at times. And, I had a moment to leave SoundCloud and off of my own accord, and I basically just wanted to take a gap year and take the time off. I had done a lot of work. I hadn't gotten to travel or focus on my family. It was a very, very absorbing decade of my life. And I kind of felt like I owed it to myself and my sanity to take a little bit of time off. And it was really, really lovely. I'd recommend it to anyone who can afford to do it. And just focus on the personal life. I knew I wanted to start another company, but wanted to afford the time to kind of let the idea come naturally and not rush into anything, which I did. Traveled a bit, spent a little over a month in Amsterdam. I got married, which was incredible. So I got to focus on the wedding and subsequent honeymoon. Got a puppy as well, who is a lot of fun. And just enjoyed life. And came up with the idea for Mogul pretty slowly. I took a lot of time in that year just jumping on calls with musicians and managers. And the thing that was different about it than starting Repost is we were solving a really specific problem that we saw, which was it was hard for artists to monetize on SoundCloud. With this, we just talked to maybe 100 or so artists and managers and just figured out, hey, what kind of pain points are you feeling? And, if we were going to build a product for you and you had access to an engineering team, like what would you build? And it was really nice to take that approach and take the time on the personal level and as well to set myself up for the next business.
Did you find just being able to step away from everything for a while really gave you the headspace to truly see to hear what people's pain points were as well, more so than you would have expected without taking that break?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. I think allowing yourself to take the time in the space to, you know, let's say you come with a really great idea, right? I have something called the 2 week rule, which is, you know, I'm one of those people where I come up with a new idea for a business every day. Right? I'm kind of ADD in that sense. And I get really excited about things. And my rule is I wait 2 weeks. And if the idea, I can't stop thinking about it, and I'm lying in bed awake, staring at the ceiling, and it takes about 110% of my brain power, and it lasts for that 2 week period, that's when I know how to pursue it. And so by taking this year off, I was able to do that with so many different things and give it that 2 week test. And there were things that I'd be excited about and it would fizzle out, or things I would be really excited about and it would stay, but then I'd go into it a little bit more deeply and it would become something else. And yeah, it was really, really, I'm very grateful and very fortunate to have been able to take the time and not feel like I had to rush into something immediately, and really just live in the problem space that people were feeling and just enjoy the act of talking and reconnecting with folks and being creative in coming up with solutions to different problems.
It sounds like an amazing experience that you got to.
Yeah, it was great.
Be able to do that. So for anybody that has no idea about what Mogul is, do you want to give us a quick breakdown of what it is exactly, and then maybe follow on with a rundown of what your main activities are there at the moment?
Yeah, totally. I'll give you the pitch. So the concept of Mogul is, you know, like I said, we started talking to a ton of artists and a ton of managers, and some similarities came out in a lot of the issues that they were experiencing in the industry. And to just rattle off a few, you know, I have not met one artist or manager who feels like they're getting paid 100% of what they wrote. And I would say these are probably artists and teams at the like part-time to very full-time, like superstar act level, FYI, not too much on the like early artist side. But yeah, people don't feel like they're getting paid 100% of what they're owed. A lot of people don't trust a lot of the entities that pay them, right? Be it labels, distributors, publishers, collection societies. You hear about all these stories about people getting paid incorrectly and these audits having to happen and people unearth money, but people don't really have the tools to like validate or make sure that actually the companies that are supposed to be collecting and doing these registrations and rights related services are actually doing what they should be doing, right? There's not a lot of great ways to keep them in check. And then there's this fatigue, right? So artists were managing, kind of in your intro, you mentioned that they're managing between 15 to 50 different logins to things that generate their income. And so just a really low confidence that any of those things are optimized. And so, or running tightly. And so people started coming to us with a solution. They just said, you know, I wish I had a place I could go to know if I was good or not, because I feel like across publishing and sound recording, in a lot of cases, people are operating in the dark. And so that's what Mogul is we're a solution to that problem. If you were to sort of, or I guess if you were to describe the product, it's a lot like Mint.com or Rocket Money for your music and your rights. And we've gone out and integrated with, I think the number right now is around 70. Yeah, I might be a little off on that, but around 60 or 70 different platforms, ranging from DistroKid to Universal Music to SongTrust to UMPG to different labels and PROs and neighboring rights societies, things like that. You actually connect the accounts via your username and password and we log in as you. Pull in all of your earning statements, metadata, content, and earnings into one platform. So you actually get a total picture of your business across all rights types, which a lot of people just haven't seen before. And then once we have all that data, we have basically a blueprint as to where all the royalties should be flowing through. And if we see any stoppage or gaps or issues, we alert you to those issues. So what you're getting is essentially an automated, always on desk audit of your business. So let's say that ASCAP distribution comes in, your ASCAP account is connected to us, we see an issue, you know about that immediately, versus, you know, years going by or you missing out on royalties or, you know, things of that nature. So again, just very much meant to be a place where you can have the peace of mind as an artist or part of an artist's team to know if your business is tight or not. And if something's wrong, you're given instructions and help on how to fix the issue.
Great explanation. So if anyone's listening, most people understand that there is the master side and there's the publishing side of a record. Now, what you're essentially doing is putting that information together. And I knew traditionally the reason why music rights are kept separate and you have a separate publisher and a separate record label is so they can, you can essentially compare numbers. If your record label says you sold 1 million records and then your publisher says, well, we only sold 500,000, you can go, well, something's not right here, and you go in. But I understand, you know, that's already complex as it is, and it's going to require time and money. So is Mogul able to essentially perform that function, but in a very in a lot tighter way, and also give the opportunity to smaller independent artists to be able to have that functionality across both their catalogs?
Yeah. So to answer your second question, it in its current state is free for anyone to sign up. So we believe that any artist, whether you're small or large, should be able to log in, start connecting your sources and understanding your business, right? And that's just something we feel should happen in the industry. And yeah, to your initial question, to just clarify, you're saying this is around the visualization of just both sides of the publishing and sound recording? Because if so, yes, it does do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're alerting, I mean, I guess that's the point, isn't it? Is if there is a discrepancy between one organization saying, oh, it's only had this amount of streams, and the label is saying, well, it's had this amount of streams, your software goes, yeah, something's wrong. And you know, doesn't necessarily be malicious. Maybe there's a glitch, or the track has an ISISA number, has got something glitchy wrong, and you can go and fix that. But I'm guessing, you know, anyone who is maybe being not the most honest, this is going to really kind of like shine a light on them as well and say, hey, by the way, like something's not adding up here. You might need to look into it as well. I mean, I guess, is that something that the tool might be able to be used for as well?
Yeah, so that's certainly where we would like to go with it. That level of detail and specificity doesn't exist in the product at this time, to just be completely honest. Very much of our audit tech is just based on the sources that you've connected, and this is in the current phase, right? Based on the sources you've connected, here's where there's gappage or royalties are not flowing through that should be. I think certainly the next step, yes, is to then look at, okay, you had a huge spike in your streams in Apple Music in Korea 6 or 12 months ago. How come that's not being reflected in your distributor or label agreement, right? I think once we have that type of data, and I think our product gets to a more advanced state, we can start to do more interesting things like that too. Yes, basically put the knowledge in the hands of the artists and their teams so that they can ask the right questions of the people and, you know, companies that they work with. And in other cases, also maybe bring them opportunities for them to make more money off, you know, their content as well. You know, another thing we have built certainly on our back end, it's not public in the app, but we are doing this for some artists, is we identify what platforms your music isn't on. Right. And in that scenario, that could be probably really helpful to bring to your label or distributor partner, right? Hey, here's a blueprint. Here's a way for you to make all of us more money. And so, you know, well, I think there's one component of this, which is, yeah, maybe there's folks in the music industry who are a little bit less than honest, and this tool can help kind of keep tabs on that. There's another aspect in this in which everyone wins, right? By us effectively auditing everyone's business and providing recommendations for everyone to make more money and to be optimized. I think that's more the vision.
Yeah. It's hugely powerful. Like, hats off to you to be able to do this.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think it's just a no brainer. You know, straight away when I saw this, I was, you know, telling my members, going, go and sign up to this immediately. Like, it's a,
thank you.
Why would you not do it, basically? So can you talk a little bit about, like, how does the tech actually work? How are you pulling the metadata? And just a little bit about that. Like, yeah, how does the tech work?
Yeah, it's been really hard, Nick, to be completely honest.
There's 50 logins. Intense.
It is, hats off to our tech team and to my technical co-founder, Joey. It's I look at building repost and building a distributor from scratch, and that was hard. This feels about like 50 to 100 times harder because an integration with one company is built on a completely different tech stack and has different security protocols and things like that than another, right? And each platform is very different. And yeah, to be completely honest, we are asking for forgiveness in these scenarios. So the way it works is if we want to integrate, say, BMI, we get the login credentials from the writer or artist, and we build effectively a scraper. So we log in as the artist on their behalf, and we effectively download all of their catalog files, as well as all their earning statements and any available metadata that we can. So, and then, you know, you have other platforms like YouTube or Bandcamp, which actually like do have APIs, which we are leveraging if we can get to that information more publicly. But yeah, it's what we're basically having to manage and continually oil and grease, you know, tons and tons of different integrations. And if something changes, right, there's a pop-up that they add or something like that, it breaks and we have to rebuild it. So it's been an interesting learning experience building out this type of tech. And I think it's very similar to what, if you're familiar with a service called Plaid in the music industry, it's how banks connect with one another, to share like someone's, you know, account balances or credit balances and things like that. It's a very similar product, and we're going through a lot of the same learnings that I think they did in the financial space, but we're doing that in the music industry, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I do see what you mean. So how does this work for a artist where, so I give you all my, I guess what's the difference between an artist and a label, right? So let's say I've got I'm Disciple Recordings, and I've got all my artists on there. How do I use the platform different? Do I just say to my artists, all of you are going to need to go and sign up to this? And then they go, yeah, okay, but like, who's the distributor? Because I've signed to you, so all my stuff's going through as a label. Like, how does that sort of work? Or is it only for independent artists self-releasing? Do you get what I mean?
I do, yeah. To answer your question, there's no difference right now between an artist account and a label account. We actually have gotten lots of labels to sign up, right? If you're a label and you've maybe switched distributors, maybe you do your neighboring rights through some other entities, right? You know, you have some direct platforms like Bandcamp and things like that you want to connect. There is value in aggregating all of that. And yeah, we're getting some really great feedback from some of our label partners. You know, for an artist, it's essentially the same product. I would say that for us, we've been a little bit more artist-centric in our thinking, to be completely honest. And I think there's probably more we can do to foster the relationship between, say, a label like Disciple or Never Say Die and their distributor, and basically providing that information to the artist at some point. But yeah, for right now, it's basically just aggregation and audit. And to our system, whether you're a label or whether you're an artist, there's really no difference. Now we actually have added labels as sources, right? So if you're a label and you provide earning statements or files, or you use someone like a Label Engine or a Curve, right, which sends out automated, you know, earnings files and stuff like that, you can connect or upload those files, and the label will show as a source to the artist in their dashboard. So that,
oh, that's cool,
exists. Yeah. So a label can be a source, but also I guess a label can use our platform for the aggregation and audit if they want as well.
Yeah, I've got you. So yeah, very cool. So you could, we could say to our artists here, like we're doing our distribution through, we'll say we're using Label Engine. Yeah, we can put everything in there, and all your royalties will be matched up. And then you can also go and find your neighboring rights and your performance royalty income, you know, in the UK or something. Oh, that's very cool. So I read that you'd identified more than $3 million worth of unclaimed royalties for your artists. Where are you finding these royalties? Like, where are these unclaimed royalties coming from in general?
Yeah. So the key thing to note is that it is an estimate, but in some rights types, we are better at estimating it than others, right? You look at things like mechanical publishing royalties, there are statutory rates, things like that. You can look at stream counts and essentially what's been generated on the performing rights organization or distributor side and extrapolate how much they should have made from on their mechanical royalties, if that makes sense. So there are instances like that where we can get like pretty tight on effectively if something hasn't been registered or if money has stopped flowing through that, shouldn't have, how much is out there for you. But then you have other rights types like neighboring rights, which is a little bit more dependent on how much usage and play actually happened, which is a little bit more of a back of envelope or sort of napkin math estimate, to be completely honest with you. But the way that we're finding these things is, yeah, kind of like I said earlier, it's just once people connect up enough sources, you know, we can start to piece together, you know, how much should have been generated and how much should have flown through. And if content or registrations are missing, we basically assign an estimated dollar value to that and then give that information to the artist or label or user and say, hey, you know, here's the things where the registrations seem off. You need to log into your ASCAP account or Songtrust or bring this to your publisher, right? And here's sort of our estimate as to the value of how much we think that is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I mean, will you as well be sort of offering, I guess, guides? Like a common thing I often see with independent artists is not realizing their mechanical royalties they can collect, not knowing about neighboring rights even existing, maybe not even understanding that, you know, as a band or a DJ, you can register your songs every time you have a gig and get those performance royalties, you know, that like there's whole, yeah, that's a whole industry. Are you looking to, I mean, I imagine that's a big chunk of that 10%. Are you looking to also sort of give, I guess, education support and sort of say, look, here's like a checklist and things to do in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's $2.5 billion that doesn't get paid out in the music industry because things are not registered correctly, right? And the thing that blows my mind about that stat is a majority of that money, if 3 years goes by and no one claims it, guess who it gets given to? It's given to the majors, right? Yeah. So, which, and that's kind of, I think, where, and the reason for that is, I think, A, you know, I have a tin hat theory that in some ways the industry is a little bit rigged against independent artists, but, you know, it's an education issue, to your point, right? It's not knowing what neighboring rights is or thinking that, oh, ASCAP's my publisher or, right? You hear all these types of things like that. And it's hard, right? Like you practically need to have a legal degree to understand how to get paid what you're owed. And if you're an artist who is a naturally creative mind, it's really, really difficult. And so, yeah, that's a huge part of the problem that we're trying to solve is how do we make sure the money that's owed to artists actually gets in the pockets of those artists. And yeah, you know, we're investing in our blog, we're investing in help center materials, things like that. I would like to invest more, but you know, I think the trickiest part, almost the art to what we're doing, is how do we build a product that makes it easy to connect your sources and then gives you very simple and actionable steps as to what you need to do to fix it, which has been really difficult. It's actually been like the most challenging part of building this product is our audit tab, which is where we actually show you how to make the money. I think even prior to launch, we've gone through three design iterations of that. And we're learning so much about just how artists of different backgrounds, ethnicities, you know, levels in their careers, how they think about the industry and how they're motivated and what type of education they actually do need. And you know, that's something that we're constantly iterating and learning on. And I think that's going to be really what makes or breaks this business is if we can find a way to make this simple and actionable for artists, you know, that then we'll succeed on our value offering, which is they will make more money and it will be mission accomplished. Right. So yeah, anyway, you can tell how excited I get about the education.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge part of this. Yeah.
It, you know, if you went in there, I logged in and had a quick look around and, you know, when it's got connect, you know, connect your accounts, you know, be like, we've noticed you haven't checked any neighboring rights platforms. Do you know what this is? No. Okay. Neighboring rights is this, that, and the other. So where do you live? I'm in the UK. Okay. You should sign up to PPL. I'm in the US. Make sure you do SoundCloud or Sound Exchange or something. That kind of stuff. Yeah. That's those actionable bits that I think, you know, artists and their teams will go, right. And then, you know, they just go and follow and then they link to the account. I think what you're doing is amazing. Like, and that whole, like the 2.5 billion into a black box as well. I've often sat around with friends, you know, like, how do you fix that problem? And, you know, maybe you've cracked it. Maybe this is it.
Not yet. Not yet. But we're going to try to, we'll get there. I have faith. And, It's funny. Like when you put on your product hat with this business, it's to your point, it's like, oh, you know, if you're based in the UK, it's PPL, right? Like there's so many little edge cases like this. Like the thing that kind of makes me go crazy is how do I make it so this app isn't just text everywhere? It's like, based on this, you need to do this little thing and blah, 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 right? And like, oh, this person's collecting on the public performance side of, you know, publishing. But, you know, if you work with this other company, it might change this. And, you know, it's one of those things where there's so many different.
We need to draw the line of how much you explain stuff as well. Like, you know, just go in like a spider's web.
It's a fascinating, it's really hard to build a intuitive, simple, easy to use app that makes sense to everyone around this problem. And that to me is the most exciting challenge about this from a product view.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote a book on the music industry, and one of the, it's four sections, and one section is on how publishing, royalty collection, masters, you know, how that whole side of it works, right? And it took me 2/3 of the time to write that section because, and it's only a quarter of the book, because it was just, no one had explained it well. Like, you know, there's Donald Passman, but his is all about America. And so there are either books about in America or there's books about the UK or Europe. And of course, now everybody lives in an international world and you release your music internationally. There was nothing that kind of put it all together. And I managed to do it. And that's my like thing I'm most proud of in life. But boy, oh boy, like it was so intense to get my head around and kind of get it done. So, and the fact you're, you know, mine's just explaining it. The fact you're now going to have all these bits interchanging and working with each other blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should talk after this interview. Maybe you could help us or educate us a little bit more. What's the book called?
The Label Machine. So
amazing. I'll shout out to The Label Machine. I'll have to give it a read.
It's a good chart. It's, and my publisher said it's big enough that you could defend yourself with it.
It's amazing. Yeah. Any book on the music industry probably fits that criteria.
Exactly. So I guess some other questions sort of moving slightly away that I wanted to ask you, because you know you're just a general expert in the music industry as well. What like a lot of labels want to go, and independent labels want to set up a publishing arm for the artists, especially that don't have publishing sorted. What would be your advice to make them for them to do that? Like, do you think they should even do it, or they should just guide them to become, you know, just to go and sign up to a SongTrust account? Or do you think that is something labels should be starting to do in 2024?
Yeah. So there's how you would do it today. And then I have a guess as to like how it will probably be in the next 2 to 3 years. So, you know, I think it can be very, very, very valuable for labels to set up their own publishing admin service. It's highly likely that, especially if you're an independent label signing new acts, that a lot of those artists that you're investing in are probably not covered in the way that they should. And there's a huge, huge, huge opportunity there. And I would also argue that if someone were to invest into tech, right, some of the larger at scale platforms which are great platforms, you know, you have SongTrust, you have Centric, right? But you know, even those products are getting a little outdated, right? Like I think they could, if someone were to try and do a more like at scale opportunity and throw a fresh coat of paint on it, it'd be really interesting to see some innovation happen in that space. And I do hope some of it does. Where I see that innovation coming from is distributors. So I have to think about what I say here, but you are starting to see a lot of traditional distribution companies starting to offer their own publishing admin services. So if you're in the position of a label, you know, it could be a scenario in which you just partner with your distributor on those rights and they act as a collections pipeline, much in the same way that they have been a distributor on your sound recordings. Or if you're a label who, you know, wants to build it yourself, you know, I think that can be very valuable. There's tools like Curve, which I'm a big fan of, who make it relatively easy to do, you know, deliveries, handle accounting and offer, you're giving me a look.
No, I didn't realize that you could set that up to do your publishing as well.
Yeah. So you can do pub admin through Curve now. There's more innovation and tools, I would say, coming around the space in the next couple of years. That in itself creates an opportunity, right? So I think it kind of just depends on the goal of the label, right? Like if your goal is to really focus on the label thing and pub admin makes sense as an add-on service, and you know, maybe you're a small mom and pop label, you know, few employees, like, yeah, maybe it makes sense to, you know, go with RootNote service or sign up for a Centric or a SongTrust and give up, you know, the 15 or 20% and, you know, test it and iterate on it. If you are a much larger entity, it probably makes more sense to go direct, because that, you know, 15 to 20% you'd probably be giving up to a middleman might actually start to add up. Mm-hmm. I've always been of the mindset, like, get to market quickly and don't, I'm kind of forming my idea of how to do this as I'm talking, as you can probably tell. But if it were me and I were running a label, I would probably sign up with an existing at scale service to test and make sure that the artists I've signed to my label actually want this from me, right? There's nothing worse than spending a ton of time building out a direct collections pipeline, which will be a very challenging and technical thing to build out, very relationships driven. You know, I would do it. And then, yeah, if the percent of that you're giving up to these third-party services gets over to more than a headcount or two, you know, then it might make sense to move off of that and figure out how to build it in-house. That's how I would probably do it, from like a very scrappy mentality.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. Didn't TuneCore have a publishing? So they did that, what you were describing earlier about offering publishing.
Yeah. So TuneCore, I believe, is powered through Centric. Yeah. And then CD Baby is powered through SongTrust, I believe. So, but yes, so you can sign up for TuneCore, CD Baby. But what I'm saying is, I think there is going to be a wave in the next, as someone who built a distributor from scratch and has lots of relationships in the space, I would be shocked if in the next 2 to 3 years, you don't hear about more distributors offering publishing admin as a service. And yeah, if you're a label and you already work with that distributor, like, you know, could be, and you're happy, could be easy to just keep it all in the same place.
Yeah. Thanks. I mean, a lot of labels, it's a really common question I get. So I want to get your insight on that. What are your thoughts on Spotify's new 1,000 stream payment threshold? Do you think this is due to the amount of AI music that's now being created and uploaded in the last, I guess, 12 months?
Can I swear on this?
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah, I think it's fucking I think it's fucking bullshit. Mm. I think this whole I don't know, I understand it, right? Because I've built a distributor, I sold that distributor to SoundCloud. I was at a platform where, yeah, you know, SoundCloud, there's a lot of people on that platform. There's a lot of gaming happening on any UGC platform, right? And so I think I've seen both sides. And to me, I understand the money is inconsequential to artists who make less than 1,000 plays, but it's not theirs, right? In the aggregate, it's over several years, hundreds of millions of dollars. And even though the money isn't necessarily a lot to that small artist making less than 1,000 plays, like, it doesn't change the fact that an ad was run on their content. It doesn't change the fact that a paying subscriber listened to their content. Why should that get, you know, black boxed out? It kind of goes back to that similar problem I was mentioning about the $2.5 billion that just gets given out to the industry. And the thing is, if you're a distributor or you're a label, it's kind of great, right? It means you're going to make more money off of your catalog, and specifically Spotify, right? Which is where the majority of most distributors and labels' money is coming from. It's great, but I think ethically, it's not their money to give away. I actually don't understand how this isn't straight up theft, if I can be so bold. Why it's just simply
not illegal.
It doesn't make sense to me, and I think it is a little sad. I know people are very divided on this, but it is sad to see, you know, so many like artists, you know, who are cool with it too.
Yeah, I'm divided as well. At first I was like, well, I mean, nearly everyone we work with gets more than 1,000 streams, so you know, like it's not going to affect them. And you know, maybe it makes artists go, you know what, something I've got to actually try and get to. And it gives it a little bit of a bar. And so you've got 1,000 streams, you've got to do a certain amount of things, and so you're focusing on your career, you know. That was my side. But then at the same time, you know, like you said, surely there's going to be another way of doing that, because it's not their money. It's not theirs to kind of take that 1,000 streams away from, because it does add up. So and I heard today as well that you have to have at least five of those 1,000 plays, 500 of them have to be individual as well.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got to be like, yeah, or like you can't have like, you know, a small group listening to the music more and more, which kind of sucks.
Right.
Which again eats at the niche music.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that this comes from Universal, right? It's, if you look at what's been happening to the wider music market, the independent market share has been slowly eroding the major label market share, right? So as independent music, more people going independent are starting to get bigger, the majors need to do something to you know, maintain their market share. And I think that that's very clearly what this is. I don't think that this is combating streaming fraud, right? And I'm not saying that's not a problem, right? That is a huge problem, that, you know, lots of money that should be going to artists is going to effectively these bot farms. But I think there are other ways to solve that problem. I think to kind of say, oh, this is a streaming fraud issue, but the outcome is it puts hundreds of millions of dollars into the pockets of the majors, seems like very, like, I don't know, it just seems maybe a little too good to be true, to be completely honest. Like, it's not shocking that that fell in their favor in that way, again, is my tin hat theory.
Yeah, I thought it was, and I thought streaming, the bot farms were like only 1.9% or something like that. Like, it's not actually, I mean, it is a lot. 1.9% of the, you know, what is it, a $5 billion industry or something is a lot of money, but
significant. Yeah,
it's significant, but it doesn't add up to making all these artists have to give away up to, well, 999 streams. They don't get those.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it does make it so more artists who do have significant followers and play counts have a better chance of making more money, which is good. But I think there's other ways you can accomplish that. Like, you know, something we pioneered at SoundCloud was the user-centric model. Mm. I don't know if you're familiar, but this was, you know, to anyone listening, you might not understand this. Basically, your royalties get pooled into a big pool. And then based on the market share of the collective play counts, it gets proportioned out, usually pro rata. So what that means is, like, if Drake gets 1% of all the plays on Spotify, right? Like, 1%, this is very rough math, right? But not perfect, but, you know, 1% of the money gets paid out to Drake, regardless of whether you as a user listen to Drake or not, right? But in the user-centric model, the royalties you pay, whether it's the subscription that you pay or the revenue you generate from listening to ads on content gets paid out directly to the people that you listen to, which rewards fandom much better than I think this model does. So I think there are other ways to approach it and solve these issues. And maybe we're spending too much time on this topic, but
I completely agree. Yeah. I think the other way of explaining it is, if I listen to your album, if I pay $10 a month to Spotify and all I do is listen to your album all month, you should get that $10. And at the moment, you're, like you said, 1% goes off to Drake. And right. Spotify have said, oh, no, it's all set up this way. It'd be too complex to change it. Is it? Or is it just in your favor of the majors who you've got in your back pocket? All right, I'm going to take my tin hat off now as well.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
Let's take them off. Yeah.
Nice detour. Yeah.
I kind of want to get your insight on sort of some questions that, or some experience you might have had around, you know, dealing with music artists. In your, in what do you think is the one thing that holds artists back from growing a career?
Oof, it's a good one. I think a topic we touched on is education. I think that's a really big aspect of it. I think there's also this narrative that you have to sign a major label deal and that there's sort of one path to success. I think that that's been proven that that's not the case anymore. And so I've met a lot of artists who can be, I hate to use this term, but a little narrow-minded with regards to how they think, with regards to what they think they need to do to make it. When in reality, you know, a career, you know, takes work, it takes time, takes pivoting and iterating and working with different people. And, you know, I think that's one aspect of it that I see a lot of, almost to sometimes a detrimental state. And that doesn't mean that like signing to a major label is a bad thing, right? That is a totally great and viable path to go if it's right for you, but it's not the only path. And then I think another aspect of it, and again, we're trying to solve this with Mogul, is not thinking enough about the business. And, you know, I think in a lot of cases, I tend to meet artists who tend to be all about the business, right? And they're really, really focused on like, how do I engage with my fans? How do I create monetization channels when I engage with my fans? Okay, what platform should I be more invested in? Okay, everyone else is looking at Spotify. Like, what are the other platforms I can be on to stand out and be different, right? Like, there's a whole strategy and tactic to this. And the folks who tend to be a little bit more tuned into what's actually going on with their business and looking at the data usually do tend to be a little bit better. And maybe it's not the artist, maybe it's a manager or someone on the team. But, you know, a great example is, you know, I know you asked what do people do wrong, but I'm going to talk about what people do right. Like, there was an artist I used to work with who his biggest platform was YouTube. And when we were working together, we would watch the audience retention graph like a hawk, right? And because he would upload his music to his YouTube channel, and we would see at what point in his music people were falling off, right? When was the retention dropping off on YouTube? And that changed how he produced his music and, you know, the way he thought about producing his music for fans. And we were able to get that audience retention graph up, right? And his business just like, it didn't, like, he wasn't like a huge artist now, but, you know, he's a full-time artist. So, you know, I think there are things like that where if you just take the time to look at the data, and I know there's a lot of it and it's very confusing around your business, around how people are interacting with your content, and thinking of it like a startup, right? Like pivoting and moving into the right, you know, necessary paths. You know, that can be I've seen that work pretty well for a lot of artists, for some artists at least.
Yeah, I agree. I think the biggest mistake is people thinking that I just need to write music and then I just need to get a manager and a record label and everything, and they'll just take care of the business for me.
That's
and
it.
Sorted.
Yeah.
You need to understand that yourself, because otherwise you don't know how to have conversations with those people to work with them in the first place. And I completely agree with you on the data thing. You know, what would be your advice to, I'm an artist listening right now and I'm like, okay, cool. I've got to focus a little bit more on the data. There is so much of it out there, and, you know, there's so many platforms and promise, like, we're going to help you. What would be your advice on where would be a good, you know, obviously signing up to Mogul with your very first thing.
Of course, yeah.
But secondary to that, like, where would be a good place you think people should invest their time to look, to focus on the data and use it wisely? Like, where would be the first place to start?
Yeah, I think the first thing you need to do is you need to make the time, right? So whether it's once a week or once a month, you know, make a habit of just sitting down and saying, I'm going to look at the business, I'm going to look at the data. And, you know, I think A is just like about carving out that time is probably step one. Step two is having an open mind and just asking lots of questions and just getting in there, right? And the best I could do to lead someone, just general, any artist, is I think there's looking at platform performance, right? And right now, there's probably three or four platforms where the majority of the performance will come from. But, you know, if you see a spike on NetEase in China, like, I've seen a lot of artists just glance that over and just say, oh, okay. But it's like, no, like, what caused that, right? Like, is the fact that you're growing on NetEase mean that maybe you can reach out and they'll get behind you and work with you more closely? Should you think about what it takes to get over to China and do a tour and see if you can make money there, right? I think, you know, first I would say look at like platform performance. Next after that, I would probably look at territory performance, right? So where are people listening? In particular, SoundCloud gets all the way down to city. And, you know, that can be incredibly valuable if you're thinking about, yeah, going the live route and just understanding where people are. And then what I said earlier, I found to be actually a kind of a game-changing metric, which is like, if you're in the process, and I think all artists should always be in this process, but of making the best music and the best content that you humanly can, where are people falling off? Where are people not, how are people reacting to the music that you're creating and the story that you're telling? And what can you learn from that? And how can you pivot and adjust and learn for the next one and use the data? You know, turns out people like the songs that are a minute long and not the ones that are three, right? I don't know. Like it depends. And I think you kind of just need to take the time. You need to probably invest in a tool like a chart metric or a sound chart. Of course, I would love if people use Mogul for the money side of things. And yeah, just get in the weeds. And if you don't know, if you don't feel like confident enough to figure this out yourself, find someone who is. You know, the reality is there's a lot of analytical minded people who like working with artists. Working with musicians is cool. It's fun, right? There's lots of people in other industries who might be interested in it as well. And so I think, you know, the other aspect is if maybe you're feeling a little unconfident in doing it yourself, yeah, can you bring people into the fold and bring them onto your team who can help you? And I'm usually certain that if you actually take the time to make the investment, it usually will be worth it. Yeah, and it's something that 90% of artists do not do.
I think that's great advice, carving out time for it. I mean, you know, in our groups, maybe we should implement like the first day of every month, we'll get together and we just look at the metrics. Yeah. Just pull out metrics, yeah. See what's happening. What trends did you see in 2023? And well, actually, I think you were on your gap year, weren't you?
So yeah, I was. I was not thinking that much about music, but yeah.
Let's expand. You know, let's stretch it out for like the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, and even like moving forward into 2024. What trends do you think are working for artists and labels to increase their music royalties across the board? What kind of strategies do you think are going to be working this year?
Yeah, I think there's a really big focus on creator to fan, if that makes sense, or artist to fan. So you're starting to see a lot of people praise this. I think it's easier said than done. It's harder to do this if you're a smaller artist and you're just building up that fan base. But I think once you have it, you are starting to see some really cool tech platforms. Like I'm a big fan of a service called Laylo, which is sort of a music CRM. Yeah, yeah, I think they're great. And, you know, tools like that, tools like We Are Giant, you know, Twitch, if you want to, you know, live stream direct to fans and engage with them directly and make money that way. I think that, you know, if you look at not necessarily the venture capital that's going into the space, but you look at the music tech entrepreneurs and where they're putting their time right now, I see a lot of it going towards that. And some will work, some won't. You know, we'll see where it shakes out. But, you know, I think ultimately, hopefully gone is the time where these music platforms own your audience, right? You get a ton of plays on Apple Music. You don't really have a way to direct market to them, right? And I think that's an opportunity. So especially if you're trying to build tech in the space. And I would suggest any artist start looking out for those types of tools. And, you know, how do you, yeah, create your own digital street teams and, you know, sell direct to fans and, you know, think about how you're selling your product like you were an e-commerce business, right? So I think that's another one. I think other trends, it's interesting to see what's happening with AI. Yeah. That's a very, very hot topic right now. I just wonder if kind of what Instagram did in the sense that they created these filters and made it so anyone's photos looked semi-professional, and that got people excited to share it. If the same thing can happen for music potentially, right? Is AI going to unlock more people making music, and will the consumption of that change? Right? Like, how hard will it be for me to create a Kendrick Lamar sounding song about something I'm going through and share it with my friends? I don't know. But I think that's kind of an interesting concept.
Doesn't then it also just mean then it really does come down to who you are as a personality, because the music almost becomes a side product, and it's like, well, why, if I could listen to anybody, who do I decide to listen to? Well, the guy who's maybe got an opinion about certain things and gets on stage and says stuff. So it is crazy. I mean, the other thing is, you know, going back to your artist that you worked with, that's looking at the metrics and saying, why did someone drop off at, you know, at 45 seconds? You know, the AI can just go, oh, well, it's because, like, we'll just change it now, and then we'll release four different versions, and we'll just keep, let the AI do its thing until it does that perfect retention, you know?
Yeah.
Do you embrace AI and think it's going to be positive for the future, or you think it's maybe, you know, maybe doomsday's coming? What's your...
I'm optimistic. I see, I know it's, people keep comparing it to the blockchain space, and well, I think there is merit to the Web3 blockchain space. I see so much practical use of AI. Like, I'm using it in my life every day. I use ChatGPT like for recipes now, you know, like it, and so it's one of those things where I just, I think it's a lot like when Apple unveiled the App Store, right? It took a few years before Uber came along, and these like $1 billion, like it took a while for people to understand like how people wanted to interact with these types of apps on, you know, the iPhone. I think we're in a similar phase with AI, and I think it's going to be, I'm very optimistic for the future. I think things are going to change, and I hope for the better.
I agree. I think and on the music tip, you know, when people are like, oh, anyone can make music and stuff, I was like, well, you know, that happened in the 80s when you got workstations coming out and computers, and anybody could make, you know, a song. And everyone's like, oh, right. No. And, you know, they banned over here using electronic instruments because they were worried it was going to take jobs away from the orchestra. This was a law that was passed in Britain in the 80s. It's really? Crazy. Yeah, I'll send you a link to the story because it's absolutely bonkers. But what happened, you had a huge explosion of music and 80s and synth and dance music, and it was absolutely, absolutely incredible. I think it's the same thing, like you're saying, if someone can now express themselves with an emotion or something and turn it into a song and it can be shared with people, like there'll be new forms of art and ways of people's expressing themselves that previously didn't exist. And I think we will be in a better place really at the end of the day.
We should make a calendar invite for 3 years from now, you and me, and we should listen to the last 5 minutes and see how it netted out. And we'll be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we said that, right?
Yeah, if the internet's still going, it's not taken over by Skynet. Awesome, man. So I guess, I think we're sort of coming up to a wrap. There's so many other questions I could ask, but I just want to be respectful of your time. I guess the first thing is, if someone's listening, what's the website address that they need to go to sign up?
Sure. It's usemogul.com.
usemogul.com. And if someone wants to where can people find you if they, you know, want to follow you on Twitter or LinkedIn, where are you at?
LinkedIn and Twitter, it's just Jeff Ponchik, my name. And I mean, if you want to reach out via email, Jeff at usemogul.com. We love talking to artists and labels, and we're in a period of where we're just trying to get as much feedback as humanly possible. So if you want to reach out and get on a call or talk directly, we're pretty open to it.
Awesome. That's that's refreshing to hear, especially if someone, you know, of you who's accomplished so much. That's a very nice invite to the artists. So thank you again. I really appreciate your time. Really insightful. I think what you're doing over at Mogul is amazing. I really hope it takes off. I'll be encouraging everybody I know to sign up. Thanks.
Cool. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.